dying, Father. Is there anything left? Ever since I was a child, I had a feeling that something is missing me. I want to know why I'm here. Can any of us know that? Become yourself. Then God and the devil don't matter. I want to learn. I want to understand. Be careful. Can you find the force to enable these two quite opposite lines to live together in yourself? At any moment, the wolf can devour the lamb. And you must learn what it means to become responsible. This is an exact science. And that is why you are here.
Again, this is Henrik. This is the one and only Red Eyes Radio. We are continuing to question the artificial constructs in search for authenticity, in search for what really has happened. We cover events, history, cover-ups, conspiracy, metaphysics, and so much more. RedEyesCreations.com is the website. Today, Ramiel Nagel is our guest, and we are going to talk about how to cure tooth decay, how to heal tooth infections, and about the history of dentistry. The early findings of Dr. Weston Price, who founded what later became the American Dental Association, has been largely suppressed, and now it's turned into a very unsound and toxic industry. And we'll share the details with you today. Welcome, Ramiel. It's great to have you with us. Thank you for coming on the program. I've been aware of your work for quite a few years now, so this is going to be a lot of fun, a lot of interesting stuff. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you for inviting me, and hopefully we can cause some controversy.
Well, indeed. Well, exactly. How has that journey been for you, by the way, in terms of your discoveries? Has there been a lot of controversy along the way, a lot of complaints and such?
There's really no complaints. I guess the controversy or the distortion is kind of the other way around. It's the field of dentistry is misaligned with reality, and they promote things that aren't really what they're doing. So there's just a lot of confusion that people have about it. And there's been a few dentists who's complained that they don't like what I say. But in general, most dentists agree with what I say. So
Well, that's interesting. We'll get into it, of course. But why don't we set the background a little bit for our audience, Ramiel. Tell us your story, how you've discovered, you know, basically how you can heal your own teeth, something that's we're told in dentistry is pretty much impossible. But what's the background to all of this?
Well, the background is that my daughter had a little spot on her tooth when she was around the age of one, and then that we thought maybe that's a cavity, and I didn't really know much about cavities at that time or tooth decay. And then we kept an eye on it, and the white spot became a brown spot. And then that tooth started falling apart, and it just kind of crumbled within a short period. And, of course, as parents, we were really shocked about this. And my daughter had a diet of no processed food, no sugar. Most of the food she had was organic, and she was breastfed. And so what happened didn't really make sense, because they call cavities in children baby bottle tooth decay, but she never had a bottle even. And then we call up the local dentist and see what they can do, and all the treatments sound pretty horrible to do for a little child.
Oh, yeah.
So now there's some that aren't actually so horrible, but that's a whole other story. But I knew that the treatments that they had offered it didn't sound like it was really addressing the problem, more just putting a Band-Aid on it. So I started researching because I thought things could be healed in the body. And eventually that led me to the work of Weston Price. And we tried a bunch of different things, and we finally found stuff that worked. And it wasn't a problem, even though many of her teeth had cavities. They all remineralized and got hard, and we never had to subject her to a dental treatment. And now she's got several of her adult teeth in, and they're cavity-free. And the old teeth that she has that still are decayed, that had decay, are fine as they are and don't bother her. So with children, it's really important to know that cavities is a nutritional deficiency problem. So even if I hid all the signs of the decay, that's not really getting the benefit from the tooth decay. It's not really learning the lesson. And now that we feed her better, her whole life is going to be a lot better.
Well, indeed. I mean, I wanted to backtrack there a little bit. Most people, they would simply just obey the command of the doctor, the dentist in this case. Well, but you didn't accept the explanation. Well, that must mean you were kind of into some of these topics beforehand. You knew a little bit about this. Is that the case?
Well, I studied energy medicine, like Reiki, you know, the hands-on healing modality. And I just knew something was not right, other than from the explanation. It's just nothing made sense. So that's where my interest was. And also, I didn't like the treatments. You know, the treatments offered are very unpleasurable. And the worse the treatment offered, the more motivation there is to find an alternative.
Well, that's right. That's a good thing in this case, I guess. So why don't we just talk a little bit about Weston Price here, because that's a lot of people go back there, and there's a reason for that. His findings are very interesting. They're also, I don't know if we should call them suppressed, but there seems to be not highlighted in most medical fields. It's not looked at for some reason. Tell us about Weston Price and what he found.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned suppressed, because something did happen, and I couldn't tell you exactly what happened, but something happened, and it was around World War II. And up until World War II, there was nutrition and nutrients and body chemistry that was on the forefront of all the minds of many doctors and dentists and scientists and experiments and research. Everyone was thinking about these things. Even Weston Price, all his local dentists in Cleveland, they gave him an award, they honored him, and they thought, this is really great material. And then all of a sudden, everything changes. Then nutrition is not talked about anymore. Weston Price, they said he wasn't a great dentist anymore, his same board of dentists that he worked with.
So what happened there? Have you been able to pinpoint what this is? I mean, we do research in terms of both the conspiracies and hidden history, and the fact that there's a lot of there's a reformation basically happening around the first, and specifically after World War II, and we have the new medical science being brought in a completely different way. And that's kind of what I found. A lot of these powerful families like Rockefellers and such are actually sponsoring the medical industry as such. That's what I've been able to look at. But what's your take on what happened there?
I haven't researched it, but because I didn't see a purpose into digging into it, although it's an interesting path you could follow and find out who did it and why. But yeah, it's obviously related to, it's probably the same as what you found. That would be my guess.
Money, there is a huge industry in keeping people sick, and I think taking out nutrition from the equation is one of the biggest keys in this problem, unfortunately. And of course, we could go deep and down that route. But tell us a little bit more about what Weston Price actually came to, what some of his findings were, was, and what he did.
Well, and it's important to let people know, Weston Price was the head of research at the National Dental Association, which we call the American Dental Association now. So he was in the business. He was respected. You know, he was an employee of the organization. And the simple results of what he found is that so he traveled all over the world and studied native diets, the diets of native people, and then the diets of the same native people when they are exposed to industrialization and switch their diet to an industrialized packaged processed diet. And the simple thing that he found is that the native diets had more vitamins and minerals. Specifically, on average, native diets have four times more minerals. Minerals, let's say calcium and phosphorus. Those are really important for our teeth. And on average, they have 10 times or more fat-soluble vitamins. And the fat-soluble vitamins are vitamins A, D, E, and K, and possibly other unknown vitamins. And the fat-soluble vitamins are specifically vitamins in animal fat. And I could go into his studies in more detail, but that's sort of the short summary of the work of Weston Price.
Indeed, yeah, it's incredibly interesting, and he traveled around, as you said, and it wasn't, well, there are different ways and techniques that, you know, people have been using in terms of brushing their teeth or using, you know, these different sticks or whatever. It goes back quite a while. But all of this really hasn't anything to do with, you know, in terms of the toothbrush, correct?
That is correct. the native, he found some native peoples kept their teeth clean and used sticks or tree sap or whatever. But some groups of native peoples did not brush at all, and I think it was in the Swiss Alps that he said they had green slime in their mouth, but they had no cavities.
Wow. Yeah, see, that's interesting. So that's kind of a reverse of what we know, and we'll get into that, of course. But tell us what you mean when the parts of the industrial, you know, packaged diet that we're still a part of today, of course, but what would you incorporate into that?
Well, that's let's look at a specific example of what an industrial diet is, and compare it to a modern diet. So Weston Price went to the Swiss Alps, and he studied the native people there in the Lucienthal Valley, and their native diet was rye bread, milk, cheese. That's where they got, by his analysis, most of their calories from, bread, milk, and cheese.
Hmm.
They also had barley, butter, vegetables, and some meat. That same group of people, when they switched to a modern diet, got their calories from white bread, jam, honey, sugar, and syrup. That was most of their calories, bread, sugar, syrup. And then they also had chocolate and coffee. And then they also had smaller amounts of milk, some vegetables, meat. They started adding vegetable fat and butter. So the calories, he estimated, were the same, but the minerals were several times different.
Huh. Well, that's very interesting. Let's talk about the milk a little bit there, and also, of course, in the extension, the cheese. I guess in terms of in the Swiss Alps, no pasteurization there, correct?
Of course. However, you know, when they make the cheese, they do heat it up to 86 degrees Fahrenheit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that is in Celsius. So they do heat the cheese, but it's, and pasteurization in itself is not necessarily the evil. The evil is the industrialization of the food, the taking a food that gives people life and sustains them and converting it into a commercial product where the only purpose of that product is to make a profit and that all corners are cut. So there's food that was grown to make people healthy and to live, and then there's food to make a profit. And
yeah,
in general, industrialized food is a profit-driven food. And so it's not just pasteurization, it's homogenization, it's how
right.
fresh it is, it's what the cows eat, it's what they're, the type of cow, it's what they're injected with, it's the whole energy. It's transporting milk over hundreds or thousands of miles. It's everything.
Giving them grain versus a grass-fed cow, for example.
Yeah, that's a huge, you know, the cows are very sensitive to what they eat. They're made to eat grass and various plants, and they're not supposed to have very much or any grain.
That's right. What is homogenization exactly?
Homogenization is when so milk, when you leave it in the refrigerator or out on the counter, it separates, and homogenization is a process, and there's different technologies for it. I'm not familiar with all of them, but one technology is they put the milk under high pressure and put it through very, very tiny holes, and it breaks the structure of the fat globules, and then the milk doesn't separate. So it's a convenience thing, and also if you're making a milk-based food products, the homogenized milk might work better. Like if you make ice cream, then the cream freezes differently if it's homogenized.
Yeah.
There's no good reason to do it from a health perspective. It's more of a packaging and food technology reason for doing that.
Everything must be, kind of look the same, taste the same. There can't be any difference in the milk. And also the fact is that they blend so many different milk from so many different cows that will in itself, I believe, will create a kind of a weird effect. In some cases, if we look back into, when people milk their cow, they had one cow, you know, or two maybe, and they got the milk from there. And then that way, you know what you give it and stuff like that. So exactly, it's when you enter into this process of industry and monoculture, really, of these massive, either if it's, you know, growing food, grain and everything else, or if it's milking these, you know, hundreds of cows at one time. So it's a lot of problems that arise there. But tell us, if we go back to the story of your daughter, then you said you were giving her, you know, organic food, try to give her good food and everything. What was the reason why she was getting the cavities then?
Well, there's a couple of reasons that we discovered. Of course, we can never know 100%. So both myself and my spouse were vegetarian before pregnancy, or kind of vegetarian. So that means didn't eat much or any meat or fish, animal products. And during pregnancy, she had fish sometimes, but did not have a lot of nutrient-dense bodybuilding foods. And so basically, my spouse, her bone density and nutrient density in her body was low. And then through breastfeeding, she didn't have enough minerals in her breast milk. And in addition to whatever toxicity is in my daughter's system that prevented her body from using and absorbing the calcium and the minerals well. And then when we started feeding her food, we didn't have a good map of what to give her. So we gave her too much food, like fruit. A lot of parents feed their babies fruits and vegetables, and we probably did something like that. I don't have an exact diet, but too much sweet foods, even though it was natural, and processed food. But now there's a different kind of processed food. Now it's organic processed food, but it was a still processed. There was a whole grain products, which that's a whole big story to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Not enough calcium, not enough animal fat. That's what was missing. And one of the things I talk about in my book, and it's the main message from Weston Price, is that we don't have enough fat-soluble vitamins in our modern diet. And the most important vitamin for healthy teeth is fat-soluble vitamin D. And in a normal diet that most people eat, they're getting very little or no vitamin D. The highest source of, or the foods with the most vitamin D that people might eat would be oily fish.
Mm-hmm.
But usually people don't eat oily fish that often. And you need the vitamin D to use all the minerals in your system. So, my daughter and spouse, they were probably really low in vitamin D. So,
what do you know about, like, getting vitamin D from the sun, let's say?
I think vitamin D from the sun works synergistically with vitamin D from food. And maybe it's different for each person or each race or how much sun you live, if you live in a hot place or a cool place, and how much sun you get on your body. But one example Weston Price talked about is how in the Swiss village, a modern Swiss town, which they had dentists and toothbrush and physical exercise, the kids had a lot of cavities, and they couldn't figure out why. They were trying to figure out why the kids had cavities. And part of their program to stop cavities was for the children to sunbathe, but it didn't work.
Hmm. So obviously, just to clear this off the bat right away, then, this is no good for vegetarians or vegans, then, basically.
A lot worse for vegans than vegetarians. I have some vegetarian guidelines in my book, and there's ways that vegetarians can significantly improve their diet. But the reality is, in today's world, if you live in a modern country where the soil quality isn't that good, it's very hard to get enough minerals into your body as a vegetarian. Hmm. It is possible, but it is difficult.
Even with, let's say, supplements and stuff like that,
Most supplements are not absorbed and recognized by the body. So a supplement might be better than nothing,
sure,
but it's not a natural food. The nature's supplement for human is food. There's nothing better than food that we have for our bodies.
Everything else
is an extraction of the food. So I tend to not like things that are taken where nature gets what nature made gets broken into pieces. The main supplement I recommend is fermented cod liver oil, but it's a food. It's just a concentrated food.
Yeah. And it's also about what we eat from, you know, when we eat animal protein and fat and everything else. And I think you explained this in one of your videos as well. And it's, I mean, let's think about this. When one animal eats another in nature, in the environment, very rarely do they go and cut out the fillet of the animal and barbecue it, let's say, or something like that. They eat the entire animal in most cases. I mean, if you look at a cat, when they eat a mouse or something like that, they leave everything, you know, but the gallbladder, I think, basically. So what does that do when we look at, like, all the organs, fat, bone marrow, stuff like that?
So the Indians of Canada that Weston Price visited thought that in order to be healthy, you had to eat every part of the animal every day. And yes, in nature, there's, you know, the king of the jungle, the lion or the tiger, they usually go for the liver or the fat. There's the implication is by these studies is that human biology has evolved to eat a lot of the animal. If you think of how much work a hunter-gatherer human has to put out to catch an animal, they're not going to waste it. And in cultures that Weston Price particularly found that cultures that valued the organ meats had very low or no incidence of tooth decay, because the organ meats are the location of the fat-soluble vitamins, and the organ meats have lots of minerals. And the organ meats also have something very special that we don't really talk about, which is hormones.
Hmm. Tell us more about that.
Well, I don't have that much more to say other than that.
There's important hormones in the organs, in other words, that we need. Do you know what kind of hormones we're talking about?
Well, in the, let's say, a buffalo, it has, in its adrenal gland, it has all the hormones that our adrenal glands need. So eating a little bit of that would help your body. Eating a little bit of thyroid gland would help your thyroid gland. Eating a little bit of animal brain helps your brain or your pituitary gland. It's just kind of like I think of it that way. And the indigenous cultures valued the fats that are in the organs. And what is exactly the magic that it does? I don't know, but I know that we need those foods, and when people eat those foods, they usually feel better.
You know, there are fights, if you will, that's been raging for a long time in terms of, you know, what to eat and how to eat it. And then on top of that, you have other theories overlaid in terms of, as you mentioned before, what race are you? What blood type are you? How can you handle, you know, certain things that other people can't handle or vice versa? But in your estimation, what are we meant, if we can even look at it from that point of view, but collectively, what are we meant to eat and how are we supposed to eat that?
What human beings were meant to eat was pure food processed in accordance with natural principles. That's what we are meant to eat. And that if anyone eat, and the diet that works for most people is going to be a pure food diet. And it doesn't necessarily matter if it's a little bit of more milk or less milk or more animal food or less animal food or more grain or less grain. It's really about how the food is prepared and how it's grown. Now, some of us who are imbalanced and sick have to limit our diets because our digestion doesn't function correctly.
Mm-hmm.
But if your digestion functions correctly, I think humans can eat most of any kind of food. And, we have a lot of, we've kind of grown up in a world where food has been misused. And so people have a lot of misconceptions about food. And,
Exactly. Yeah. Go ahead and finish that point, Ramya.
Well, it gets in the way of people understanding what pure food is. And how I would define pure food is how people used to eat it before Industrial Revolution. In general, any kind of food made that way is going to be healthy. And today we don't make food necessarily that way, and it's hard to.
Yeah.
But if you look at, let's say, a farming culture that has had for many generations healthy people, you could probably replicate that diet and be healthy. And today we don't do that. We don't have food traditions anymore. We have industry which tries to just sell us stuff, and it's just a big mess.
It is a big mess, and there's so many components here I want to talk more about, of course, and I want to go back to nutrition a little bit later and talk about the effects of that, because I think tooth decay, you know, is although it's nasty and very, you know, painful, it can be very painful, it's still one of the, I think, lesser side effects of it. We have things like cancer raging in our society practically all around the world, and I definitely think this is it's a matter of nutrition, no doubt, so let's get back to that a little bit later. But let's say that we have one, who is in a particularly bad state, very deficient in terms of vitamins and minerals and everything else. They have a bad state when it comes to their teeth and such. What would you recommend them to eat, if we can talk about that a little bit?
Well, the first thing, and the easiest recommendation, or almost the easiest recommendation to follow, is to get fat-soluble vitamin D, because it's been proven that vitamin D will reduce your rate of cavities by 47%. And the best product available for that is the fermented olive oil by Green Pastures. I understand maybe not everyone in your audience has access to that. So another olive oil that has its natural vitamin D, or oily fish, or fish livers. Sometimes you can buy fish livers in other countries, but we need the vitamin D.
Yeah. What would you say to people who are, because I've heard this from other people, they're so concerned with the mercury levels in fish, so they actually don't eat it anymore.
Well, the particular fermented olive oil from Green Pastures, they test the mercury levels, and it's either, I can't remember if it's not detected, but it's far below the highest safety standards that there are for mercury in food. So there is naturally occurring mercury in fish. There's also naturally occurring mercury in seaweed. There's also heavy metals naturally occurring in different kinds of herbs. There's heavy metals in seaweed. There's heavy metals in probably seafood. Not a lot, but very small amounts, and it's naturally occurring. In general, the mercury, this was proven in the United States, the tuna industry sued the, I don't remember who they sued, but they sued whoever said that mercury in fish and tuna is dangerous. And they proved that the mercury has not changed for the last 100 years.
Really?
Yes, really.
Interesting. Well, there's a lot of stuff, you know, we haven't heard of course, as usual. And on top of that, you know, we have to realize that we're in a situation where food industries are fighting with each other as well. You know, on top of that, you have the grain industry that's basically trying to preserve itself. On top of that, you might have the dairy industry with their, you know, pasteurized and homogenized stuff. They're also trying to protect itself. So we're in a war pretty much of propaganda, of people trying to, or companies trying to sell their stuff, right?
Yeah, and, you know, there is the problem with the ocean is it is being overfished and it is being polluted and the breeding grounds are being destroyed and the fishing is not done sustainably in many places. And it's really destructive what people do. That's true. But I think the solution, at least for the ocean is, and for other food is we have to honor the food that we get. And we can't deprive ourselves and just live off corn and wheat and soy. We have to give ourselves what we need and feel good about it and kind of cultivate a good energy and a sense of responsibility for the food we eat. And that's the only way things are going to get better.
Well, indeed. And on top of that, Ramil, these days we have GMOs coming in as well, which just, I mean, it just makes it exponentially worse. Have you done any research on GMOs and food that are manipulated?
A little bit. And like you said, it's exponentially worse. And again, this the problem is that there's the food industry, which is really disconnected from the people and is trying to make more money and take advantage of people. And with the GMOs, it's to the point where they're trying to make normal food, non-GMO food, where the seeds work normally. They want to make that food illegal and own all the food on the planet. And it's just, it's complete madness that any government would even allow such patenting of seeds and all that stuff, because you have to draw the line at some point of what's, of sort of on moral grounds of what should and shouldn't be done.
Well, exactly. And then, you know, it's a really bad state of things because we have the food industry lobbying the government and that comes in, and that's the ultimate villain, really, in this scenario, because they're really preventing other people what to eat or what to produce and what other people want to buy from them. And sure, you have industry and they're lobbying everything, but government literally comes in there with the law. And we have this in Sweden, of course, where raw milk, for example, is made illegal to sell. So you're not allowed to do it. For a while, they actually sold it under the label of cat food because it was like, you know, it was kind of a wink, wink, and nod, nod, if you will, with sold to people legally to give to their cats. But of course, people bought it anyway to, you know, to drink it and stuff like that. But so that's a whole other question, you know, on top of that, to making some of these foods illegal, Ramil.
Well, it's true that the companies that are competing could be evil and doing really bad things. But we also have to look at how is it that we have a government that doesn't listen to the taxpayers? You know,
yeah.
What's the tax rate in Sweden?
Oh, jeez. Don't even get
like
me started
50%
on that.
Or something,
well,
right?
At least. I mean, it depends on what you're doing.
So
but yeah.
The taxpayers are paying for the government. So there shouldn't be anyone else who can pay for other things to the government to manipulate them.
Well, you'd think.
If the government and the taxpayers had a relationship where the taxpayers are the one paying and nobody else, the government would do exactly what the taxpayers want because the government does whatever the money tells it to do. And
that's right.
So that's the problem. You know, I paid thousands and thousands of dollars for my taxes, and yet in a normal world, my government official would be doing what I wanted them to do because I'm paying them. But we don't have a normal world. We have a disturbed world where the government has allowed itself to be corrupted by other money influences when it really shouldn't be.
Well, exactly. I mean, ultimately, this should be the personal choice of free individuals living on this planet at this point. But we're not looking at that scenario. We're looking at something completely different where we are being, effectively controlled by the people who are supposed to, you know, support us. But what's funny about this as well, Bramiel, is that you'd think that this would be an interest from this point of view for, let's say, government, who are have to spend more and more money on you know, socialist, you know, medical welfare and everything else, whatever it's called. And it's like, I know in America, things are really backward in terms of that as well, like it is in Sweden. No different there in terms of, you know, the medical industry and how sick people are in generally. So wouldn't there be a level of research here somewhere along the line where they would be interested in, like, trying to decrease some of these expenditures on sick people? What do you think?
That is rational thinking, that we could really find what causes illness. And like you said, we can decrease it and give people what they need, and everyone would be happy, and they wouldn't have to go to the doctor very much. And we have so many resources at our disposal, you know, thousands of scientists and billions of dollars. And yet apparently nobody cares enough to do very much about it. Otherwise I wouldn't have had to write my book, because there's surely lots of dental schools and dentists and lots of money in the field of dentistry that could be used to study this into such depth and detail that we could know exactly in every level how to cure everyone's cavities and the best treatments for everyone, and how to do it so simply and easily and make it available so that we could, no one would have cavities and everyone would be healthy. We have all that ability to do that right now, and it wouldn't even take that much money to do it, and yet people don't want to.
Unbelievable. Your book is called Cure Tooth Decay. Very, very simple. The website is Cure Tooth Decay as well. We're going to bring that up again later towards the end of this first segment, and of course tell people how they can get copies of the book, because that's really what the book is. It's a self-helping guide how to, you know, basically take control over your not having to go to the dentist, basically, and solving some of these issues yourself. But we're told, Ramiel, that we can't, you know, that teeth can't heal. Tell us about this kind of disconnection that we learn that everything else in the body heals. We, you know, for most part, okay, we can't cut off an arm and it's going to grow back. But if there's a minor cut or the loss of a little bit of tissue, it can, you know, replenish, grow back instead. But not when it comes to the teeth. Why is that then?
Well, first of all, who told you teeth can't heal?
That's just one of these, things that have spread. I can't remember if when I ever went to the dentist that they told me that, but basically I remember asking them this many years ago, you know, it's like, can't the tooth heal? You know, it's like if there's a problem with the tooth, can't it heal? I was like, nah, generally not. Maybe if it's a small cavity or something like that, but generally if it's going, it's going, gone kind of thing.
And that's sort of what the dental industry does. Maybe they don't promote that too often. Maybe they don't say teeth can't heal, but what they don't tell you is that teeth can heal. So it's what they're not telling us that's the problem. And that's what I talk about in the beginning of my book. It's the American Dental Association, and I assume in most Western countries they say approximately the same thing. They say that bacteria creates acid and it dissolves your teeth, and that causes tooth decay. And that's based on a theory that's over 100 years old by a dentist called W.D. Miller. But when he wrote that theory, and I quoted him on this, he said that a perfect tooth resists acid indefinitely. So what that means is that the real theory of tooth decay, based on this, on the work of this dentist W.D. Miller, is that if your teeth are weak, acid dissolves teeth.
Mm-hmm.
If your teeth are strong, it doesn't matter what happens to them, nothing will dissolve your teeth. And if they tell us that strong teeth do not decay, they tell us that little piece of information, then the obvious thought that most people want to know is, well, how do I make my teeth strong?
That's right. Yeah.
But that's left out. And in that gap of ignorance, the field of dentistry can come in and create a profit by doing a surgical procedure to people's mouths.
Yeah.
So, however, there is a little bit of truth in that, let's say you go to the dentist, So everything is really segmented and separate. So you go to the dentist, and he looks at your tooth, and there's a medium-sized hole, and it's soft and maybe even painful. And he knows that if he doesn't put a sealing, take out the decay and seal it, that if you leave that hole how it is, it's probably going to get a lot bigger. But he's only looking at it from a very segmented point of view, just looking in that tooth and looking at cavities in a fatalistic perspective, as if that's just the way it is and there's nothing one can do about it. Again, that's because that's what they teach in dental school. There's no alternative dental school where they teach prevention that I'm aware of. That's what they teach you to do is to do surgery. And that's all the dentist knows how to do. And there's no profession of treating cavities without surgery.
Well, that's what we have fluoride for, right? I remember in school, the fluoride lady comes once every other week and you know, and the kid says, I accidentally swallowed mine. Oh, it's okay. It's okay. Fluoride. Tell us about the dangers of fluoride, Ramiel.
Well, if fluoride worked, then, you know, in the U.S., the dental industry is $100 billion. If fluoride worked, there wouldn't be many dentists. And they actually thought fluoride was going to work. So then they created this field of orthodontics where they put braces on kids and mess up their bone structure. But that's a whole other story. The simple message about fluoride is that it's a byproduct from the chemical and fertilizer industry. It's really toxic. It's a hazardous waste product. The U.S. government has recently admitted, I can't remember what department it is, that there's nothing that's called a minimum safe dose. There's no dose that you can give to someone and say it's completely safe for fluoride. And because of that, it shouldn't be put in our water supply. Because the fluoride bonds into the tooth, topical fluoride will temporarily make the tooth harder, but and change the level at the pH level at which the tooth deteriorates. So it gives you a slight buffering effect, but what the consequences and side effects of the topical fluoride are, I don't know if they've even been well studied.
Yeah.
The internal fluoride, a certain percentage of people who take fluoride internally are going to get dental fluorosis, which is the fluoride actually damages the teeth and causes pitting and white spots. And that's a known problem to the whole fluoride business. The bottom line is it's a chemical, it's toxic, it doesn't really work. It doesn't really prevent cavities in the long run. And it's just another product being sold to the unwary consumer or being sold to a city. The city is being sold a water treatment program in which a company can turn this toxic waste, which used to be expensive to dispose, to something they can make some more money on. And it makes people sick and unhealthy and internal fluoride and messes with their enzymes and it's been correlated with cancer. Did you see the video, Dr. Dean Burke? He worked for the National Cancer Institute, and he found that where they add fluoride in the water in the U.S. in the major cities, then after 5 or 10 years, the cancer rates would go up.
Oh,
they have
wow.
a little video clip of him talking about this.
Wow.
Yeah. So one could deduce that the purpose of fluoride in the water is to cause cancer.
And think about it from this point of view as well. And just to clarify that again, obviously we don't have it in Sweden. We don't have it in the water supply, but we get it through school and other, you know, places. And of course,
to take it or just topical.
Yeah. Well, you rinse your mouth with it basically and then spit it out. That's the idea. That's what they do there. I don't know if they've actually continued with that, but I guess they would do so. It's like a sign of progress for them or something like that. I don't know, but for you guys, it's even worse, of course, but to have it in the water supply. I think Ireland, maybe parts of the UK has it as well, because there's no control of dosage. They don't know how much water, water people drink. They don't know how big they are, you know, versus size and weight and everything else. That means that the dissemination that one person might be getting because they're fairly small and drinks a lot of water from the tap, let's say, they could get a huge dosage. I can't believe that there's no one, there are people talking about it, but, you know, on the official level, there's no one discussing these things.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, surely on the official level, people have discussed it like Dr. Dean Burke, and that was many years ago. And I think Congress did a study on it. But when there's what people say and talk about, and then there's what happens. And also sure. the fluoride chelates out the metals that are in the pipes, metals and other materials get pooled into the water with the fluoride.
Yeah, it's a sad state of affairs. Now, let's talk a little bit about how cavities begin, if there's different types, I guess, because I'm a little confused about this myself. Is it generally that a cavity starts from the inside of the tooth and then it kind of works itself outward, or in some cases does it start like a smaller hole on the outside of the tooth and then goes in, Ramil? Is this two different types of cavities, or is this just one way of these?
There's many types of cavities, and this is something that would be great if we had money and people who cared. We could research it and really pinpoint all the different kinds. But I'll give you a simple explanation. Our teeth are exposed to wear and tear. So every time you chew, there's, you know, all this, I can't remember, it's like 1,000 pounds of per inch of force. There's enormous amount of pressure and force on each tooth. Every time you chew, every time you close your mouth, maybe at nighttime you bite down, there's a lot of force that goes on each tooth. And our teeth are also actually designed to slowly wear down over time. Slowly, just a little bit as we age, slowly wear out, and then also to rebuild. And what happens is, for many people, not everyone, if the density of their tooth is not strong enough, it's like a house. If the house isn't built strong enough and there's a strong wind, it might blow over. If the tooth is not built strong enough based on what the person's eating mostly or toxins they're exposed to, then from the normal wear and tear of living, a hole will develop somewhere. It could be where the hole develops and how it exactly develops, that depends on the specific factors. So there could be gum line cavities, which could be caused by biting a certain way or brushing a certain way. And there could be cavities on the top of the tooth, which could be caused by compression forces or eating certain kinds of food. There could be cavities in between the teeth that are caused by different forces, which, you know, so there's many different causes on the tiny level, but the big level is the tooth wasn't strong enough to deal with the forces that it was designed to deal with. And the teeth also are designed to wear down. So there is, so they wear down a little bit, but they don't build up because the diet isn't good enough. And that's when you get a cavity or what a dentist describes as a cavity. But many times they'll say anything's a cavity because not all dentists will do this, but some will say anything's a cavity. And I've seen this in person. Any normal dent in a tooth could become a cavity because it's another way for them to make money. And because they make money from drilling, it distorts reality for them because the money incentive changes how they see things.
Yeah, indeed. There's a status quo in all this as well. As soon as there is an industry, there is a reluctancy for any kind of change because that means people would not be in the position of having these jobs anymore because we would have effectively, quote unquote, solved that issue, that problem, so we could have moved on. I mean, we've made this comparison before with even like, as a, you know, sillier example perhaps, but the light bulb, you know, it's like somewhere in the United States, there's this light bulb that is over 100 years old. Because at the time when they started, they built really good, sturdy light bulbs. They lasted for a long time. And then the cartels got together, even actually together with the unions, who said, wait a minute, we have a whole industry here that basically is going to go out of non-existence because people are going to buy their light bulbs, and then the light bulbs are going to basically last forever. So they formed a cartel and said, let's build them worse. Let's build them, you know, in a worse state, basically, so that they break down sooner. And that way we can keep our jobs and people, you know, have to keep on buying the light bulbs. And, I mean, that's a different kind of example, but it's still kind of the same idea. People need to go back to the dentist regularly and, you know, the dentist, they can pay their mortgages and everything is good, right?
that was a great example. And in some cases, the frequent and hard dental probing will cause, and a very rough cleaning, and even toothbrushing with abrasive toothpaste can all contribute to cavities. And unfortunately, because people are afraid about getting their needs met and having enough that they come up with these plans, like you talked about, the light bulb. And so we don't live the quality of life that we could be living if people weren't afraid about losing their jobs or whatever. However, there is a lot of jobs for dentists. They could be doing good stuff.
Yeah.
Dentists could be the heroes, but they'd have the whole profession would have to change significantly.
Yeah, that's right. We're going to take a break here in a little bit, Ramiel, but basically what the types of cavities that you talked about before, the concept here then is that basically any kind, whatever version you have of this, anything can be healed with the proper food and by remineralizing the teeth, correct?
It gets remineralized. In other words, it gets hard and the cavity doesn't progress. If you have a large hole in the tooth, the hole won't fill itself in and disappear, although it has sort of happened to some people, but the cavity will get hard. So the actual cause of why it's soft can be taken away, and then you don't have the consistent problem anymore. That's what the cure is that I teach.
Very good. Let's talk about your website then a little bit. Give out the URL and, of course, the book title, where people can go to pick up a copy of the book, Ramiel.
It's curetoothdecay.com. And in the book, I'll mention that a lot of people have many questions or confusion before they read the book. Very few people after reading the book have any questions for me, because I teach everything that I know in a way that empowers the person so that they feel complete and that they understand the problem in order to make the next steps they need in their life for their dental health.
Very good. Good stuff. CureToothDecay.com. That's the website. Head on over there. Check it out. And, of course, if you want to find out more about this, pick up a copy of the book and see what it means and if we can solve some of these issues. Stay with us, Ramiel. We'll take a short break here and we'll return with more shortly.
Remember to call my name. I don't. If you speak my name, I'm flowing. If with all these things we invoke here, people won't do. I don't mind the thing. I don't mind the thing. Ha! We'll be right back.
And that's our first hour with Ramiel Nagel. We're going to carry on in the second hour and continue the story of dentistry, toxicity, and how to heal your teeth naturally. We will talk about sugar, high fructose corn syrup, and sugar alternatives, and if any of them actually are any good. Later, we'll discuss mercury and amalgam, this toxic material that might be in your teeth, leaching into your body. Ramiel gives us some tips on what to eat and what not to eat to remineralize your teeth. And we'll also detail the options when it comes to dentistry and what you can do to make sure that you get a hold of a good holistic dentist if you need to. RedIceMembers.com is the website for subscribers. You can listen to any of our previous programs from there when you sign up. We have over 700 programs on all kinds of topics that we consider to be interesting, beneficial, shocking, and to a certain degree off the wall entertaining as well. Next up is Julia and B.J. Davis for an absolutely shocking story of a border protection agent who the government, the U.S. government, turned on for simply doing her job, reporting known terrorists' entry into the United States. It's an incredible story that you shouldn't miss. After this, we have the Danish scientist Niels Harrit on the World Trade Center saga and the evidence of thermite in the dust from the buildings. We'll take a short break right here, but we'll be back after that with Ramiel Nagel for Hour 2. We'll talk to you on the other side.